So, first, before we start the actual talk, I wanted to really show what we're going to talk about in this session, because there are some related sessions on ASP.NET as well here at this event. So, if we think back at what ASP.NET was in 10 years ago, almost 10 years ago, we had the .NET framework, and we had ASP.NET. And you did ASP.NET, so you did ASP.NET web forms. That was all there was to it. I started, I think, in 2001. I did ASP.NET. That's the way I learned .NET. And there was nothing else than simple web forms. Now, things have changed, of course. And Microsoft has added quite a lot of extra frameworks and stuff next to web forms. And that's why it's impossible today to do a presentation on everything that's new in the ASP.NET platform in little over an hour. That's impossible. So that's why I really wanted to pin down on some features, and other features are covered in other sessions. I have at the end of the slide deck one slide with related sessions that you can pick up from this conference as well. So as said, web forms is essentially what ASP.NET started with. And that has evolved as well. And in this session, I'm going to talk about ASP.NET Web Forms 4.0. The new stuff in ASP.NET Web Forms, what has changed, what is new, what has been added to the platform, that I will be talking about. A few years after ASP.NET was introduced, I think in 2005, 2006, not sure anymore, Microsoft started with ASP.NET Ajax, a separate platform that was first as a separate download, and then it was integrated in ASP.NET as well. Today, there is also a new version of ASP.NET, ASP.NET Ajax 4.0. We're not going to talk in this session about Ajax 4.0. I'm going to talk, I think, 1 minute about it, but then for the rest, I will refer you to a session given by Fritz Onion, I think tomorrow in the afternoon, and he's going to talk about all the new features in ASP.NET 4.0, ASP.NET Ajax 4.0, I'm sorry. Some time ago, Microsoft also started with ASP.NET MVC. ASP.NET MVC is next to web forms. It's another way of doing web development in ASP.NET. It will not replace web forms. They're both here to stay. It also evolved. It's now at ASP.NET MVC 2. I will not be talking about MVC as well. There are, I think, two sessions here at the conference about MVC that are specific to MVC, so we'll not go in that as well. But we will go in ASP.NET Dynamic Data for about 10-15 minutes. There is a session on ASP.NET Dynamic Data as well. So we'll be talking briefly about Dynamic Data's most important new features. I think not many people have actually worked with Dynamic Data, so we'll first show what it actually is, what you can do with it, and after that, I'll show the new features of the platform. And of course, how else could it be? We'll also talk about Visual Studio 2010, the flagship IDE that Microsoft has been building for us for the .NET Framework 4.0, ASP.NET 4.0, is of course tied to Visual Studio 2010, and we'll be looking at the new features that ASP.NET developers can benefit from in this new version of the IDE. So that's exactly what I'm going to be talking about. More specifically, these are the points that I'll be showing to you. So we'll start with Visual Studio 2010. I'll first show you the new project templates. Very easy, very basic, but it's interesting to know that they are there. After that, I will be diving into the improved IntelliSense and code snippets in the code editor in Visual Studio 2010. There are quite a lot of them, and we'll take a look at how we can be more productive in typing our code in the HTML editor. After that, we'll, of course, dive in, as said, the biggest part of this presentation, and that's ASP.NET Web Forms 4.0. First, I'll be talking about a new client ID. Client IDs have always been, let's say, a mess, like ASP.NET generates them, long client IDs. We finally now have, with version 4 of the platform, control over our client IDs. I'll be showing how we can, from code behind, set how the client IDs, the client-side IDs for our controls, what they can be. Next, we'll look at view state. View state is also is one of the pillars of ASP.NET, we can easily say, but it has been causing some frustration, mainly resulting in performance, bigger source dump which it's creating, And we'll take a look at what ASP.NET 4 offers there. We have much more control over the view state with this new version. Thirdly, I'll be looking at routing in combination with other SEO enhancements. ASP.NET 4.0 now integrates with the routing engine that was originally built with ASP.NET MVC. It's mainly an SEO enhancement. So SEO stands for Search Engine Optimization. So if you can build much more cleaner URLs with this routing engine. And in combination with that, I'll also show a few other SEO enhancements that ASP.NET 4.0 integrates. Next, we'll look at the query extender control. That's a new control that you can append on the link data source, the entity data source. That's a small one. A very important one is also the control enhancements. It's now you'll see that the HTML that is generated by the ASP.NET controls is much cleaner, and we'll take a look at some of these controls in action. And finally, I'll also show charting. Charting is not really new. It was already available for 3.5, but I show how it's now integrated in the 4.0 framework. So we'll quickly go over AJAX, we'll quickly go over MVC, and we'll finish off with an overview of Dynamic Data 4.0. For the people who don't know Dynamic Data, I'll first do a one-minute demo on Dynamic Data 3.5. Then we'll take a look at adding dynamic data in existing projects, mainly for its validation engine, and we'll finish off with entity templates. So quite a full agenda, so let's get to it. As said, of course, the environment, Visual Studio 2010, has improved. There are a few things that are worth mentioning when working with Visual Studio 2010. And the first one is the new project templates. Think back of Visual Studio 2008. What did you get when you created a new web application? You got a default ASPX. You got a default ASPX.cs, so the code behind file. There was a styles file generated, a global ASX, stuff like that. And when you hit F5 in Visual Studio with a newly created project, you saw nothing. And then next to you is sitting an ASP.NET MVC guy, and he's doing exactly the same file, new project, ASP.NET MVC application, and he hits F5 and boom, he has a nice looking application already. Because the project template for Visual Studio, for MVC, was already much more extended. So with regular web forms development, we got actually some, but we got nothing. There was nothing to see. And Microsoft sat back and they thought, well, why don't we integrate the template that was available for MVC development in web forms as well? And that's what they have now. So the regular ASP.NET web application out of the box is already much better looking. I'll show that in just a second. Some of you probably say, well, I don't need all the things that Visual Studio is generating for me. The first thing I do is deleting everything. And Microsoft has also thought about those people, and they said, well, yeah, we'll also allow you to build an empty web application. And as the word says, it's really empty. There's only a web.config in there that's also very clean. So we have now the two extremes. Instead of having the middle route, which was more or less nothing. We got some files, but it didn't have some good files. We now have either a very clean start with the empty project template, or we have a good start with the regular web application. Let me start by showing you those project templates in action. I'll very quickly show them to you. You can figure it out for yourself probably as well. So let's head over to File, New Project. And as you can see here, we have, I don't know if it's visible, we'll make it a bit larger. So we now have a empty web application and, of course, still the regular app application. So I start with an empty web application. I'll call it empty web app. I'll execute the template. And of course, it should be very quick because there's actually nothing in there. As you can see, the only thing that is available here is a web.config file. And what is in that web.config? Also, quite not a lot, actually. It's simply saying that it's targeting framework 4.0. That's it. That's a clean start. The other extreme is, of course, the new web application template. Let me call it web application 2 for now. It's executing, and as you can see, I have quite a lot of files already generated for me. have, of course, the default, the about page. There is a master page. There is web.config. There is some files for logging in, logging out, changing password. There is scripts already added. JScript, the jQuery, sorry, are added. And there's a styles file. And if we run this, we'll see a site that's very similar looking to an empty MVC application. As you can see here, we have a home page, we have an about page. We can do a login. We can do a register already. And so it is already using ASP.NET membership. If we take a quick look in the web.config, you'll see, apart from the fact that it's also targeting framework 4.0, it is also using the membership things like the profiles, the roles, and stuff like that. So very easy to start with. It's easy to get to do demos, and I'll be using this one as well in my presentation for the rest. Okay, so let's get now a bit more into code. When I started ASP.NET development, I think I was a student still at that time, so long ago. The thing that I did, I got a designer and I said, oh, that's really nice. Drag some stuff on there and whoop, my page is done. My work was really quickly done, actually. But over time, I evolved, of course, and I started doing more code. And now it's very rarely that I actually open the designer, perhaps to see some stuff, what I'm doing, but normally I'm working in the code editor. Who's actually still using the designer today in Visual Studio for ASP.NET development? Very few people, as you can see. Yeah? So most people are typing the code themselves. So you'll be happy to see that Microsoft actually did a lot of work on the code editor by adding a lot of interesting code snippets. For example, you now have HTML code snippets. You can type table, you can type input, and it will generate an HTML table or an HTML button, an input button. There were a lot of more, a lot of better ASP.NET code snippets. I'll show them in just a second. You'll see that it's not generating only the tag, but it's generating also some more required stuff within the tag. JScript, JavaScript has also been changed a bit, the IntelliSense there, and of course ASP.NET Ajax as well. So this is not an interesting thing to talk about. It's more interesting to show this in a demo, of course. So I'll go back to my open presentation, and I'll take the default page here. Let's go ahead. And for example, let's first try the new HTML snippets. What about adding a table? So I simply type table, and it's generating for me a table structure with a border, with a cell padding, and a cell spacing I leave to zero. There we go. Normally, if you have to type this, that's quite a lot of annoying things that you have to write. You have to write the table row, the table dimension. Now it's all generated for you. It's also available, for example, for a button. Let's say we want to write an HTML button. An HTML button is, of course, an input. So I can say input. Wham, there we go. And now I can say this is a button, and the name is my button, and the value is hello dev days. There we go. So these are the new HTML snippets. There are, of course, many more. I'm not going to show them all. They are yours to discover. Let's now take a look at the new HTML, ASP.NET snippets. For example, let's say we want to add another button, an ASP button. Now I simply type button, and it's generating for me a button, magically. A button is one thing, but do you remember, for example, which templates you have to write for a login view? I always have to check those things. So let's say we say, I want to add a login view. And it's now not only generating the open-close tag for the login view, but it's also generating the required templates. So that's nice as well. Also, we can say, I want to add a script tag. There we go. Simply type script, and it's generating a JavaScript script open and close tag. And within that JavaScript tag, I can, for example, also say fu. And hit tab. It creates a function, and it creates the function skeleton for me as well. So as you can see, there are a lot of IntelliSense improvements in the code editor now available. Most people use the code editor, so you'll be more productive in your code editing work in Visual Studio 2010. Okay, let's head back to the slides. Now we arrived at the web forms 4.0 part. I put Mr. T up there because he's also the powerful one. Web forms 4.0 is of course also really powerful. And you see that most things that have been changed, have been added in ASP.NET 4.0 are, let's say, polishments to the existing things. There are not that many new things. It's not like going from ASP 1.1 to 2.0. That's not it. It's more refinements of the existing things that you'll see that have happened in ASP.NET 4.0. I think one of the best examples is the first one, client IDs. Think back of, again, ASP.NET 1.0 in 2001, 2002, you were doing that development, and your code, your HTML code, you actually didn't care about that much at that time. You said, well, yeah, ASP.NET is generating client IDs. And those client IDs look like, at the top there, we have CTL00, content placeholder 1, _ my label. That's what ASP.NET does for us. At the time, we didn't write that much JavaScript, and ASP.NET was taking care of the fact that at the client side, no two client IDs were the same, so that's why it was always concatenating them. So that's what ASP.NET was doing that for us, and we didn't actually care. But then Ajax came along, and we started to write JavaScript again. And remember, when we were writing JavaScript, and we had those kinds client IDs, that was actually not easy to work with. On top of that, mind you, that ASP.NET, for example, it's concatenating stuff, and I add another panel around my label, for example, the client ID will change. So that's not a good thing either. Now, with the previous versions of ASP.NET, it was not possible to say from code behind what the client ID should be. It wasn't possible to change that. With ASP.NET 4.0, we get control over the client IDs. And that's, I think, the most important feature in ASP.NET 4.0. This makes it easy for me to write my JavaScript, to write CSS, keeping track of my client IDs. They will not change because I can set them now from my code behind. To make it possible, there is a new property added, and that's the client ID mode. So the client ID mode can now be set to static. Static is like the most extreme one. If you say client ID mode is static and the ID is my label, you'll see at the client side the label client ID will still be my label. Now, using static everywhere is of course not possible. Think of, for example, a list view in which you have several rows that will be generated with some labels in there. If you set it to static, all labels will of course have the same name, and you cannot do any JavaScript things with them either, because you cannot get a unique label with a client ID because they're all the same. For that, we have the predictable mode. And predictable is, as the word says it, it's you can more or less expect what the client IDs will be. It's a more, let's say, a structured way for ASP.NET to generate your client IDs in repeating controls. I'll show it in a demo in just a few seconds. It works together with the client ID row suffix, or you can use it together with the client ID row suffix. The client row suffix actually does is you can say which of the columns that you're actually adding, for example, an ID, that has to be appended to the generated client ID to make them unique. Of course, there is still auto ID, and auto ID refers to the old ASP.NET engine that generates the client IDs, just as we saw at the top. This is the default at page level still. So it is still the default. So if you don't change anything, you'll still see your, let's say, ugly client IDs appearing. The inherit mode is actually the default for controls. So that means that if you set at your page static, for example, all controls within your page will become static. Statically named client IDs. Okay, let's take a look at this in a sample. Let me open my demo. Client ID mode, that's the one. What is this then? Okay, thank you. Perhaps we can open it from here. Client ID demo. Okay, that's faster. Now the other one is ready as proof course. Yeah, okay. Thank you, demo gods. Okay, so this is the client ID mode. Okay, so what I did now is here I set actually the default. At the top, I set client ID mode to auto ID. Let's take a look at what this is generating. Let's run this. We'll open the source. And we will see some ugly IDs. Whoops, I've made an error here. 1 second, I'm sorry for that. A label is... Where is my label here? It's so small on the screen now. There we go. Let me remove this, otherwise we won't, of course, see the difference. Save it again. Okay. Let's take a look at the source again. And now we'll see, for example, a label here that has received the client ID ctl00_main_content_info label. That was a label. And this is actually the output of a list view with several labels in there. Whoops. And they are all receiving an ugly looking name. As you can see here, the event ID is CTL00 main content event is 2 CTL0 event ID label, and this will be, of course, CTL1, and so on and so forth. Now we can change that. Let's, for example, say the label that can be statically named. For example, the label I can then say client ID mode equals static. There we go. If we take a look at the outcome now, let's open the source again, you'll see that the label now actually has the same name, info label, as it had in the code behind. If I now do that for my list view as well, I may run into troubles. Let's try it. For example, let me put here a client ID mode equal to static as well. Now, the default for all child controls is take a look at their parent and then check what their client ID mode is. So that means that all these labels within the list view will get client ID mode is static as well. So if I run this again, I open the source again, you'll see that, indeed, they all got the same name as in the code behind, but it's all the same. So that's not a good thing to do, because my code will... I will not be able to write JavaScript code that uniquely gets one of these elements. So we have to undo that. And we can use the predictable mode here. So I can now say use predictable, and as client ID row suffix, I want you to use event ID. So as the word it says, it's a row suffix. It will actually be appended to each of the client IDs. So I'm going to say use event ID here as well. And now let's run it again. There we go. We'll now see that while they are not really clean, what ASP.NET is now doing, it's making a concatenation of the parent, that's main content, that's the name of the list view, then append it with the name of the control, that's event ID label, and then append it with this ID, and that's the event ID. That's coming from the client ID row suffix. So here it's appending a 2, here it's appending a 7. And while they're not really clean, I cannot statically create them, they're much more predictable in how ASP.NET will now generate them. So as I said, I really think this is one of the most striking new features in the platform. So take a look at it, and I think you'll be amazed what you can achieve with this. The next one is view state. So view state, I think we all know view state. Now, why, if we think back at why view state is actually available or created in ASP.NET, it is because ASP.NET, of course, uses the HTTP protocol. And the HTTP protocol is, by default, a stateless protocol. View state is a thing that makes it possible to, let's say, keep state between several requests to the server because it's creating a lot of characters, and that's a state, of course, in the source code. And that's how the server can, let's say, recreate the original page. Now, who actually likes view state? Not many people. Why? Why do we not like view state? Because it is a performance hog. It creates a lot of extra, it increases the message size that will be sent to the browser with each request. On the other hand, we need it. But we don't need it for our entire page. Many controls on our page don't have to use view state. If I put on my page a list view with nothing but read-only data, why would I need a view state? Well, Microsoft said, why don't you disable the view state for your controls? And then I think, well, yeah, why don't we all disable it? And then I think back, we are developers. And I don't know how it's in the Netherlands, but in Belgium, developers are lazy. I think they are here as well. But, now, developers are lazy and they will not go through the page and enable or disable view state for each and every control where they don't need it. And the other problem was that you cannot disable view state on a higher level and re-enable it on a lower level. So let's say disable it on the page and then enable it on a specific control. That was not possible. Now with ASP.NET 4.0, we have this ability. We can now disable the view state on a higher level control and disable it on a higher level control and re-enable it on any control within that page. For that, we have now the view state mode property, which is also enabled by default. It is still enabled. But we can disable it. So we can now say on my page, disable it on my list view or my label or don't know what. I want to enable it again. And so I have now a more fine-grained control over what will be in my view state without having to put it on disabled, enable view state false on each and every control within my page, except from the one that actually has to use it. Inherit is the default value for control, actually. So again, the controls will take a look at their parent just with the client, just like with the client ID, to take a look what they should use for their view state mode. Let's take a look at the view state enhancements in action. Let me open my solution. The view state demo. And let me take a look what I have here now. So view state mode, as you can see, has been set to enabled, which is the default. So that means that all my controls, and I have here on my page, as you can see, a list view somewhere. Where is it? Here it is, a grid view, sorry. That retrieves all products from the AdventureWorks database. If I run this, I actually should not be tracking state for this list view. Because take a look at what's happening. I see this, I have my grid view, that's okay, that's fine. It's arguable that it's not a good idea to put so many products on the page, but that's a different story. But let's take a look first at the source size. The source size is 159K. Now, why is that? Because, in fact, yeah, there is some HTML on the page, but still 159K, that's quite a lot. Let's take at the view source. Let's take a look at the source. And here we have the culprit. There we go. As you can see here, I hope you don't get dizzy if I scroll through this. This is my view state, and that's actually responsible for about 100K of that 159K. And that is because there is a lot of view state generated for that grid view that does not need it, because if I do a post back, don't take a look at the top yet, it's still there. I don't need view state for that control. So in ASP.NET 3.5, I could have disabled it. But now I'll say on my entire page, well, I don't need that view state thing anymore for most of my controls, so I set it to disabled. I run my page again. Oh, I stopped it. Done. And if we take a look now, the source size is now, oops, that's the wrong one. The source size is now 66K. And the page still does the same work. It's still showing my my grid view. Now, there is, of course, one thing that I haven't shown yet. This was possible to do with 3.5 as well. But now, I can say on this control, which is here a placeholder, which has a label inside of it, I want the view state to be enabled. A second control, the first one actually, sets it to disabled. So I can now say per control if I want to enable view state or not. If you take a look at the code behind, you'll see that both these labels get their text from code behind. And that means that if I don't keep the track of the view state for both of those controls, they will lose their text. And that's what you actually saw perhaps when I clicked on the button. When I click here, this one still has its view state. And that's the view state that we see here. That's actually this. That's the view state for the label. But this one didn't have it enabled, so it lost its contents. The thing is, the message is, you now have complete control over what you want to enable or see in your view state, what has to have view state and not, without having to enable or disable it on each and every control. Okay, let's take a look at the next new feature, and that is the routing engine. The routing engine, perhaps you know, was already available in ASP.NET MVC. It was also partly available, but actually almost no one actually used it, in ASP.NET 3.5 SP1, but it was not complete there yet. Now it is entirely, let's say, moved from the MVC framework to WebForms. Now, what is the routing engine? It's actually a way to do URL rewriting. You make clean URLs with this that are by ASP.NET physically mapped to a specific page or ASPX page within your site. A good example of URL routing is how CodePlex does it. I think you all know CodePlex. And this is actually a URL I took of CodePlex. The original one was to take a look at a release, a change set of the Ajax Control Toolkit. So ajaxcontroltoolkit.codeplex.com/releases/view.aspx ?release ID is 36097. That's quite a long URL. And that's also a URL that search engines don't really like. When they changed it using the routing engine, it's now much cleaner, as you can see. It's now ajaxcontroltoolkit.codeplex.com/releases/views/36097. It's readable for us. It's much more readable for us. But it's also much more readable for search engines. I can tell you from my own experience, when I changed this on my blog to make the URLs cleaner, I got a lot more hits from search engines such as Google and Bing. Because it knows more what the URL is doing. It's much more cleaner. So you'll actually get more traffic generated to your application. It's also handy if you have part of your application in MVC, you can now use the same routes for the web forms part in your site. So if you have a mixed site, you can also use the routing engine for both here. That's also a good thing. Now, how does the routing actually work? Well, it's rather simple to do. To start, you have in your global ASX, you have to define what your routes will be. You have to define like a route table. So ASP.NET knows which route will physically map to a file within your site. For example, my list/release/view will map to a file view.aspx. That therefore does not have to be, for example, in the release folder. You can hide your physical structure of your site as well using routes. Normally, if I would have needed to capture the 36097 release ID, I would have used a request.query string or request.params to capture that ID. If I have to do that now with the routing engine, I can use the page.route data. The page.route data will get me the input, the variables from my query string. I'll show that in just a second. And if I need in controls such as a link data source, for example, a parameter retrieved from that query string, I can also use a new type of parameter, which is the ASP route parameter. I showed them all in one demo, but before I go to the demo, I want to show you some other SEO enhancements that are available in ASP.NET 4.0. First, it's now possible to do to add keywords and to add descriptions from code behind. So using the page meta keywords and page meta description properties, you can now set from code behind both meta keywords and your description. This was not possible in previous versions. I know most search engines don't actually use this anymore, but let's say that you have an internal crawler on your network, your intranet website. Still, those key names and keywords and meta descriptions can come in handy. It's also now possible for ASP.NET to do to send an HTTP 301. A 301 is a permanent redirect. And why is that necessary? Why is that very handy? So if I move my blog to a new URL, I want the search engines to update their tables. If not, they will still come to my site, and then I can do a normal redirect. But I actually want the search engine to update all the links to my new site. For that, you can send a permanent redirect, and that's an HTTP 301, and you can now send that from ASP.NET as well, using the response.redirect permanent with as a parameter the new URL you want the search engine to look at. So it will scrap the original one, and it will replace it with the new one automatically. Okay, let's take a look at those routing and other SEO enhancements in action. Okay, so let me first run my demo. I have a few. So this is a regular page. I don't have the routing enabled on this page yet. When I click on employees, you see that the route is actually simple list/employees. When I go back to managers, it's now simple list managers, and similarly, this one goes to simple list/maintenance. There is no ASPX in there anymore. How did it now figure out which file to physically show me, which physical file to show me? Well, for that we have now the routing engine enabled. In my global ASX, I created a few routes. The first one is one that's not used in this demo. So this one is the route that we're actually using. Sorry, I have to first say, in your application start, I call a method in which I'm registering my routes. I forgot that. So register routes, passing in the route table.routes. They are coming in as a route collection, and to that I can add page routes using the map page route method. So the first parameter is the name of my route. I call it simple route. And it has the pattern simple list/type. And that will map to a physical file, demo1list.aspx, and that's this file here. So I'm not showing the physical name of the file in the URL, I'm simply showing the URL. Now if you take a look at the code in demo1.aspx, you'll see that I'm posting back to simple list/employees, so that employees is going into this one, in type. And that's how it's doing the actual mapping. That also means, maybe you've already understood, that if I type here now something else, you see that popping up here because I simply got that parameter from the URL. How did I get that parameter from the URL? Well, I used the page.route data. That's demo1list.espx, that's this one. So to actually get either the maintenance or the employees or whatever, I simply asked page.route data, values, type maps back to, again, this type, so it will actually pick up the string that's in there and use that for the route data. Now this is a very basic way of using it. Let's take a look at a more real-life sample. For example, I have here a list of categories, of all categories that are available in the AdventureWorks database products. I click on either one of them, and I arrive at a page product list/9, product list/31. So there's a product category ID being passed in. How did I get those products here? Well, first of all, I defined another route in my route table. Let's go back to the global ASEX. So there's a second route here. This is the name. This is the pattern. I will now say go to product list slash the category. Physically go to products in category.aspx. And there's also another parameter here, which is passing in a default. So if I'm going to product list, go to product list and use for category ID 22. That's what I'm doing here. So the product list page, let's open that one. The products in category. It has a grid view that is retrieving, that's not important for now, that is retrieving its data from a SQL data source. You saw earlier in the link here, it's passing in 31 for the category. Now I have to capture that category inside of my SQL data source. For that, I can use the new ASP route parameter. And I'm saying here the route key equals category, so that's how it knows to map the 31 with category, and it can retrieve the correct data for me. I'm also doing in code behind here, as you can see. I'm setting from code behind the meta description, the title was also possible, meta keywords, I can do that now with the property as well. The final thing I wanted to show you is the 301. So I have a page here. Yeah, that's going to be a difficult one to actually show. Yeah, sorry. That's too small the screen. So I hope you can read it. Here it's referring to oldugly_page.aspx. But I actually don't want people to view my old ugly page anymore. Because my old ugly page still uses Aqua and it lives in 1996. So I want everyone to hit my old ugly page to be permanently redirected to my new page. So what I'm doing here is I'm doing a response.redirect permanent to new page. When search engines go to old ugly page, they'll get a 301. You can see this with Fiddler as well. And of course, you'll be redirected as well. But a search engine will pick it up and make a change to its route table. Okay. The next new feature is the query extender control. It's actually a new control that works together with either the link data source or the entity data source. It's quite a difficult one to actually explain, so I'll be brief about it. It allows us to, when you use a link data source or an entity data source, to add some filtering to the results. But the filtering is smart in that it will not do the filtering after we send the query. It will actually append an extra query to the query that's actually being sent to the database. This allows us to do searching, filtering. We can do a range, for example. We can say get all products between 1 and the price between 1 and 100. Or we can even do custom. As said, I'll be brief about it. I'll just show it in a demo because it's much easier to understand. We're still running. There we go. Okay. Thank you. Let's open another one. There we go. Query extender. So, let me first show the demo. Here I have all products, again, loaded from the AdventureWorks database. Let me open SQL Profiler so we can see what query is being sent. I now want to do a search within those products. So, for example, I want all products that start with the HL. Is that this one? Okay, start. So I want all products that start with HL. Let's try that. There we go. That's a normal search. Now, the query extender actually made sure that the link data source only did an optimal query. As you can see here, I appended to the query that was to be sent by the link data source with this, where the name actually starts with HL%, so it starts with HL. Yeah. Now, how did I do this? I used the query extender control for this. I think it's this one. The search page. So I have a regular grid view. that is bound to the link data source. That link data source is nothing special. It will retrieve products, as you can see here. And now I have added a query extender control. And what that query extender control does, it's targeting the link data source, and it's actually adding an extra search expression. On the name, which is a data field, I have set search type starts with, and the value is a control parameter named search text box. So that's the way how I append it to that query. I can do other stuff with that. For example, I can say I want some range, for example. I want all products that have a price between, let's say, 30 and 100. There we go. We get only those products back. How did I actually program this? Well, I used a range expression on my query extender that actually took the values of those two controls and applied them on the list price. Now, I understand you normally won't get there with these things. That's why it's also possible to create a custom query and append that using the query extender. For example, this one actually already does a custom query. It's doing a filtering. You'll see that the prices are between 100 and, I think, 1,000 or something, and they are ordered by list price. How did I achieve this? Well, in my custom page, I added another query extender control that is now referring to an onQuerying, and that's a method that I'm calling here in the code behind, which is called filter products. That filter product is actually creating another query. We're saying here, get me all the products where the list price is larger than 100, order them by list price. And the query that's actually executed, let's scroll down, as you can see here, will do an order by and get only those back that are larger than 100. There we go. So the query extender makes it possible to do, let's say, late filtering, late searching with existing link data sources or entity data sources. It's a nice little control that can be handy in some situations. Let's close this. And let's stop this as well. I hope this one stops now. There we go. Okay. So now we have arrived at another really important one, I think, and that's control enhancements. Many existing controls, they output tables as if they were free. I think they are free, but you can see that when you look at the HTML source. Very often, they are surrounded with a non-functional or non-useful table. There are some styles in there. Many controls actually do this. For example, a menu, a form view, a login view, they're real artists in creating non-useful HTML. That's not really that important unless you really want to be able to style all the output that is generated by the controls. For example, if I have to do some CSS styling and there is a style already applied on a specific element, it's hard to get to that element. This is a good example. This is what a form view normally does. So I actually simply specified an item template with a static word content in there. And what you can see is the HTML that is created by ASP.NET 3.5. You see a table with a cell spacing, a border. There's even a style in there, a table row, a table dimension with a call span 2. Then I finally get my content, and then all the tags are closed. Now with ASP.NET 4.0, I have more control over this. It's not the default, which is quite logical because otherwise some things may break. But you can now say on the control itself, render outer table equals false. And when I say that, that's what the output is going to be. Clean the word content, clean HTML, that's all that's going to be rendered for me. So all the extraneous tables and styles are removed. It's simply the word content that's going to be there. We have control over the rendering engine that should be used by specifying, I think, one of the properties that has the longest names. That's a control rendering compatibility version. I had to say that 5 times for the mirror this morning. So, You can set it to 3.5 or 4.0, simply to say if the ASP.NET controls should use the legacy rendering or should use the new rendering by default. I'm going to show you a few of those control enhancements, also some other ones that I haven't mentioned yet. Let me open my demo for that one, and we'll take a look first at the, I think, the form view. No, that's going to be the, list view. The list view has a small enhancement. I'm using, again, products from the AdventureWorks database here. It has a small enhancement, but it's not visible in HTML. Let me show you what I mean. Let's take a look at the view list view enhancements. So with the old way, that's this one. This is how we would have defined a list view in ASP.NET 3.5. So we create both an item template and a layout template. Those are mandatory, because the layout template is actually what is going to be the surrounding element, and the item template is what is going to be rendered for each individual element. In ASP.NET 4.0, I now have the ability to simply specify the item template and surround it with, in this case, the containing element, which is a UL. I do not need the item placeholder anymore. The outcome is the same. I can show it to you. This is, I didn't disable view state. Sorry for that. So this is the old way. It renders an ordered list with list items. And if you go all the way down, you see, I think I saw it passing already. Yeah, it's quite difficult to find on such a small resolution. Anyway, it still does the same. It renders the UL with LIs in there. Let's now take a look at the form view. This is the one that I showed you already in code, on the slide, in the code. So this is the old rendering of the form view. And this is the new one. You can see the HTML is in a sea of emptiness, let's say. It's completely clean HTML. I have more control over what the outcome will be. How did I do this? Well, in my list view, in my form view, I set the render outer table property to false, and that completely removed the outer table rendering. They also took a look at the menu. The menu was also not really clean how it was generated. Perhaps you know it if you have to style it sometime. Now it's also much cleaner HTML that it's actually generating. As you can see here, it is now using, this is the menu, it's now using a UL that is somewhere in here with some LIs. Again, so it's using an unordered list with some list items. And that's also much easier to style than what it would used to do, and that was creating tables. And finally, the radio button list is another good example of things that have changed. Perhaps you knew that the radio button list could be rendered either as a flow, so that means using breaks, or using a table. This generated quite some ugly HTML. So this is what the flow does. This is the one. This is what the flow actually does. It creates a few labels with some breaks in there. And this is what the table does. It's creating a table. Yeah. Now with 4.0, I can also now specify that it has to use either an ordered list, so an OL, or an unordered list, and that's a UL. Resulting again in cleaner HTML. Let me first scroll to it. So either we have the OL being generated, or we have the UL with list items being added to it. Again, much more control over styling that we have using this way of generating the HTML. Okay. A few words on charting. Perhaps you didn't know that, but there is charting available in ASP.NET 3.5 as well. With Service Pack 1. It was added as an extra add-on that you could use for creating charts in your applications. I'm not going to talk about it. These are some samples of charts that can be created with the ASP.NET charting control. It's a very powerful control, actually, and I'll show it live in a small demo. So I have a few available here in my demo. So this is the design time view that you get. As you can select the control, of course, and I hope you can see there are quite a number of types. There are actually over 35, I think, 35 or exactly, or 36 or something, types of possible, of available graph types, and many of them are also 3D. So you can add nice effects to your applications using this control. Let's run it. So this is an example of a static chart that is generated. On the right, we have a 3D chart, the same chart, but in 3D then. And I also have a pie chart with way too many pieces of pie on there. That's also generated using the ASP.NET pie, the ASP.NET charting control. Okay, I'm going to try closing them both. Okay, it worked. So these are the most important features in ASP.NET Web Forms 4.0. Some things have changed, as you saw, most of them being polishments to the existing things, but they're very powerful things that we were really missing in the existing ASP.NET framework. Now let's take a look at ASP.NET Ajax. As said, I will briefly cover what's new, but the rest, there's another talk on ASP.NET tomorrow, ASP.NET for Ajax tomorrow. So some of the new things include client-side templating, client-side controls, the possibility to do data binding on the client using JavaScript as well, the option to do read-writes from the browser to the database. That's also new. It's also, of course, cross-browser compatible, and it is also not tied to ASP.NET. These are the most, in a nutshell, important features that are new in ASP.NET 4.0. What's also new is that the library has been split in several smaller files. So the client library was actually quite large, and with Ajax, you want your pages to be as quickly loading as possible. So therefore, Microsoft decided to refactor the library somehow and make it available in several smaller files, including the ones that you see here. And at the bottom, you see the two ones that support new features, being the Ajax templates and the Ajax ADO.net.JavaScript. Of course, jQuery is also supported within ASP.NET Ajax 4.0. It was already available in Visual Studio 2008. It's, of course, now still available in Visual Studio 2010. It's an open source thing, but Microsoft also offers support for it, so you can really take advantage of jQuery in your applications as well. And finally, the Ajax Control Toolkit has also been extended. There are some new controls and, available in the 4.0 version of the Control Toolkit. And very briefly on ASP.NET MVC. So ASP.NET MVC stands for Model View Controller. It's now, with Visual Studio 2010, arrived at version 2. It allows us to build, to have more fine-grained control over the applications that we build. The HTML will be cleaner. The code that we write for it will be cleaner. It allows to build test-driven applications much easier than with regular web forms. It allows separation of concerns. So if you're into doing test-driven development, MVC is something that you really should be looking at. There are two sessions. I think one is going on right now in a different room, and there's another one, I think, later today on MVC as well. Finally, what I wanted to talk about is dynamic data. Dynamic data is, I also pictured it there as a small poodle. It's a small brother in the ASP.NET family. Normally, when I do a talk about dynamic data, I ask the question, who has already worked with dynamic data? So today again, who has already worked with dynamic data? Two people, three people, four people? Yeah, that's normal. Many people don't even know it exists because it was, let's say, snuck into the framework with ASP.NET 3.5 SP1. Maybe you've seen that in your available project templates, there was now dynamic data templates available. Now, therefore, I'm lucky that I included this slide because otherwise no one would have been able to follow. What is dynamic data? It's actually a scaffolding framework. Now you all know what it is. Huh? Probably not. What it's doing, it's making it really easy to build data-driven web applications. You can really build a dynamic data-driven application in 1 minute. I'll show it in a few minutes after I've explained what it is. What it does, it's taking a look at the available model, the model that can come from entity framework, for example. And based on that model, it will generate for me an entire site that I can use for CRUD operations. You can say, well, yeah, okay, that's nice for CRUD operations, but that's it. That's true, but I must say I have used dynamic data already for things where I only need CRUD. When I'm doing a large ASP.NET web application, I come across tables that have to be editable by the end user, like languages and currencies and all that kinds of things. But you have to build, normally you would have to build screens for that, you have to build queries for that, and it's time consuming and it's not really a valuable work that you're doing. Simply throw those things at dynamic data and it generates everything for you. I'll show it in just a second. Now I said generate, it's not actually generating code, it's using templates. It's using page templates like list.aspx and detail.aspx, and it's using and within those pages, it is using controls. So it sees that in your model, for example, you have a Boolean, it will generate a checkbox. If it sees that you're using an integer, it will generate a numeric text box for you. So it's entirely template-based, and that's what really makes it powerful. Because you can edit, you can change those templates, you can hook into them. And what it also features is a very strong validation engine. Because that's something that's, at this point, more or less missing in ASP.NET. We have support for paging, we have support for sorting and all kinds of things, but validation is something that's not really in there. And I'll come back to validation in the next slide. But the first thing that I'm going to do is show dynamic data in 1 minute. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to commit a crime here and open Visual Studio 2008. And I'm going to say, create me a new dynamic data website. So here are the templates, if you have never noticed them. I'm going to create a new dynamic data web application. The web application actually looks quite regular, but there is one folder in there called dynamic data, quite normally, which has the templates for you available. Let me quickly, because I forgot to make the font bigger in Visual Studio 2008. Let's put it to 15. Okay. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to first generate a model. I'm going to create a new Link to SQL model. So let's go to Link to SQL class and let's add an Adventure Works model. There we go. And I'm simply going to open my Server Explorer here. I'm going to take the AdventureWorks database, take the tables, select all tables, drop them on here. There you go. Now I have a Link to SQL available. Now, the only thing I have to do is take a look at the name of the context that has been generated for me. It is in this case AdventureWorks Model Data Context. Now, this is a dynamic data website, so there is some extra code generated for me in the global ASEX. And to make it even easier, there's some commented out code that you simply have to comment in again. The only thing I have to do here is say, use this context to generate stuff for me, to generate tables for me. And I want you, in this case, for now, scaffold all tables. Scaffolding actually means generate them using the templates. I'll run it. And I hope I'm still within my one minute time limit. And there we have it. We have generated all available tables. I can click on addresses. I can say edit. I can give a new value here. And I can say update this. As said, it also uses validation. It looks at the model, the types of the fields. For example, if I am going to say this, enter a string here, it's going to give me an error because it already knows what types it is expecting. If you want to go further in this, you can even add metadata types on your available generated entities to go further in the validation engine, and it will pick those things up immediately. So it really has a strong validation engine. Now, one of the things that was a bit of a problem with ASP.NET Dynamic Data 3.5 is that it was quite difficult to add dynamic data in an existing website. I say difficult, it's not really difficult, but it was a process. You had to move the entire dynamic data folder into your web application, and it took you some time to set things straight. Now, what they did with ASP.NET Dynamic Data 4 is they made it possible using one property to make take the validation engine that is available in dynamic data and make that available on regular web forms. By using a property which is called enable dynamic data on the grid view, the list view, the details view, and the form view. This way I can use the dynamic data validation inside of my existing web application. So let's say I have a web forms application. I'm now going back to Visual Studio 2010. He's still stopping this one. Let's open another one. So I'm going to open a regular ASP.NET 4 application. I didn't do any dynamic data stuff in here. Yes, okay, thank you. Okay, let me run it. So there we go. Normally, when on a grid view, for example, I would do edit, and I would type some wrongly typed data, for example, enter a string for a daytime. It would cause an error with a regular ASP.NET error page. Now, here it won't. Let's say that I'm typing AAA for an integer that would normally cause an error. I say update, and it's triggering a nice error message. Instead of going into ASP.NET errors, it's giving me a nice error. Now, how did I do that? Well, I used the validation engine that is available in dynamic data. By simply, on that grid view, saying this line of code, enable dynamic data, passing in the type that is going to be edited in this case, I can use the validation engine of dynamic data. I didn't do anything else to make those stars, and I had a validation summary, but for the rest, it is all dynamic data that is doing this for me. It is available, as said, on the form view, on the list view. I have it here on the details view, for example. It's working exactly the same. So you can see here, you can say enable dynamic data on the details view, and it does the same thing. So let's take a look at the details view. You can say edit here. Enter AAA here as well, and it will also do the validation for me. So I now have the strong validation engine of dynamic data available in my regular web forms applications. And that's really a cool feature, I think. So remember this property, enable dynamic data, it's an extension method. It's the only thing that you have to do to steal the validation engine from dynamic data. You don't have to import anything else. And the final thing I wanted to show you, which might be a bit difficult to understand, is that it now it might be a bit difficult to understand if you haven't worked with dynamic data yet. So earlier there were page templates and field templates available in 3.5. So the page templates actually created the page, like a details page, the overview page, the list page, and the form, the list templates actually. The detail templates actually made it possible to generate a checkbox or a text box and stuff like that. Now, it was possible to, with 3.5, to hook into that generation process and change the templates.
I mean, dynamic data for the extended that model, because there is now a new type, and that's the entity template. And the entity template will actually make it possible to say, for example, for an address, I want the rendering, I want the generation of the page that the dynamic data is using to be different. So for that, I can use normal, the default ASCX, which is the default, it is used for every control, and I can use a customized ASCX for a specific type of entity. Let me show that. So, again, this might be a bit difficult to understand if you haven't worked with dynamic data yet. So what I'm doing here is I'm rendering all entities with the defaults, and these are the default entities, as you can see here. So address, for example, when I go into edit, uses the regular default template. But when I go to product, when I go to its edits page, it's blue. Now, how did I create this blue thing? Well, actually, I added an extra template, as you can see here. So in my entity templates, these are the regular templates that will generate all the fields for me. I added one, product_edit, and what dynamic data will do, it will actually look at the name of the template and look if it's corresponding to the entity that you're working with. So it's going to be product_edit.ascx, and in there I put a blue background color on the table. So that's what it's actually doing. It's taking a look at the entity, and I can therefore change the template for a specific entity. So I can override the complete rendering for one specific entity if I want to. So with that, we have come to the end of the talk. I really want to emphasize that ASP.NET 4.0 is polishing to the framework. There are some really cool things in there. We saw the ability to do client IDs. We saw the ability to have more control over the view state. The cleaner HTML is also a really important one if you're into clean HTML to do proper CSS rendering. Also, Visual Studio 2010 offers new possibilities, new code snippets, and better IntelliSense in the code editor. And really take a look at dynamic data. It's really cool to build administration sites with dynamic data in just a snap. Your boss will be amazed by it. Dynamic data offers some new things. It's maturing the framework. There is an entire session on dynamic data as well that I don't have in my related sessions, because I only heard about it this morning. So these are the sessions that I really advise you to follow. They actually pick up where I left off on ASP.NET Ajax, on MVC, and dynamic data. I want to thank you for attending this session, and I want to wish you a very pleasant conference for the rest of the day and tomorrow. Thank you.